As we begin our look into the book of Proverbs, another one of the big collections of wisdom literature, it's important to understand what the Proverbs are. We need to think in terms of a process of developing a moral lifestyle or an education. Proverbs are linked to education. They're a means by which wisdom is communicated from one generation to the next. And that becomes a key theme in the book of Proverbs. The word proverb itself is actually from a Latin term which means for a verb. In other words, these are more words which are intended to take place of many words. They are concise distillations of wisdom compacted into a few phrases. They're poetic in that sense because poetry has a way of taking big ideas and reducing them to small statements. In the small statements is contained the wisdom of the whole. It's also important as we enter the book of Proverbs to understand that even though not a lot of overt or extended theology is found in the book of Proverbs, there's not a lot new that we're going to learn in terms of the theology of Israel, the theology of Israel's relationship with God, God's intentions for Israel. Not a lot new is learned, but that the worldview of Genesis and Exodus is assumed. In other words, these proverbs make no sense on their own. They make no sense if we isolate them from the context of Israel's life with and before God. These proverbs emerge out of the moral matrix of a creator who has established right and wrong in the creation, and a redeemer who has moved into Israel's community and spoken of moral values and the manner in which people ought to treat one another. So even though there's not a lot of new theology that's stated, it is the worldview of Genesis and Exodus, the worldview of the creation and redemption that is assumed, even though it's not always stated. And we have to understand the power of Hebrew poetry. We have to understand especially antithetic parallelism to summarize key moral concepts. Antithetic parallelism, again, is the dominant expression of Hebrew proverbs. Two lines stated together, focusing in opposite directions, but accomplishing a singular purpose. Don't do this, instead do that. Don't be like them so that you may be like them. Don't engage in this activity in order that you may engage in this activity. Don't and do. Put back together, back to back together, they form a singular concept. They form a direction, a motion, an activity. Antithetic parallelism. And we have to be very intent about understanding the fact that Proverbs has a larger uniform package. It has a final form which is bigger than any of the parts. We can read and appreciate each of the individual proverbs on its own. They are pithy statements of wisdom. But the book belongs in the Bible because of some other things that are going on. And here's what's going on in the Proverbs. When you look at the collection as a whole, it has a prologue. And then it has a significant collection of lectures on the topics or the personalities of wisdom and folly. And then come a number of collections of Proverbs themselves. And finally, an epilogue, which, as we're going to talk about in the future, reflects on the whole of the collection. Now, we can read the individual chapters and even read the individual verses to our benefit, to our profit, because they give wisdom. But it's also helpful for us to look at the collection as a whole in terms of its general outline to see that there's a flow and a larger message that's being put forward through these things. Yes, the wisdom comes in the Proverbs. But even more wisdom comes when you understand that the Proverbs point to a bigger idea that is an ultimate relationship between God and God's people. Here's how it all begins. It's in the prologue. The first seven verses of Proverbs 1. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And in fact, the largest collections of the Proverbs themselves are attributed to Solomon. Some other collections are appended to those initial Proverbs of Solomon, but that's the largest collection. Remember that Solomon, when he became king at a very young age, when his dad died, he asked for wisdom to rule well. And God granted that wisdom, making him one of the wisest people who's ever lived. And this becomes sort of the pithy statements of the wisdom of Solomon as it comes to us. Here's what it's about, he says. For learning about wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for gaining instruction in wise dealing, righteousness, justice, and equity, to teach shrewdness to the simple, knowledge and prudence to the young, let the wise also hear and gain in learning, and the discerning to acquire skill, to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Notice the different kinds of parallelism there. For learning about wisdom and instruction, for understanding about words of insight, synonymous parallelism. The next verse, stair-like parallelism. The next verse, synonymous parallelism. The next verse, synonymous parallelism. The next verse, synonymous parallelism. And the last verse, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Antithetic parallelism, which is what we will look at as the major way in which these things are expressed. Now, the dominant theme in the book of Proverbs enters right up front as the challenge of a social relationship. The key metaphor at the beginning is akin to boy meets girl. In fact, we might say in Proverbs, boy meets two girls, and that's how I've expressed it in the pictures that I found looking at that very kind of thing. Which one of these women will this male be attracted to and why? And the lectures on wisdom and folly that form the largest first collection in the book of Proverbs are all about that. Because in the Hebrew language, both wisdom and folly are feminine nouns. And the device that's used in order to express that is this recurrent statement, my son, listen to my words. My son, listen to my words. Now, I know that in many translations of the Bible, there's a desire to make gender-neutral language prominent, and I applaud that generally, but here it's important to see that the word is my son, not my child, my son. Because all of us as readers and hearers are supposed to become this son, masculine, who is courted by two women, the feminine wisdom and folly. And at the end of these lectures, all must choose which woman to be with. If we go with wisdom, wisdom will bring stability and well-being to our lives. Whereas if we go with folly, folly will lead us into quick experiences but tragic ends. So the lectures are very carefully planned. Notice their balance in a kind of chiasm. We've talked about chiasm before. Notice that the beginning and the end are similar, and then the next portions in between are similar, and then there's this complementary set of inner language lectures about the benefits of wisdom and the warnings against adultery. Now, why adultery? Because to go with folly is to commit adultery. We are made to be married to God. And when we choose ways that are not God's ways, it is spiritual adultery. So it's a very clever and intentional method by which these ideas are performed. Notice the balance between these things. Wisdom's call at the beginning and at the end. Enticement to perverse ways, but folly doesn't get just the last thing. There's also wisdom's invitation. And in between, a balance of number of lines so that there's almost exactly the same number of lines in each group or each collection or each statement. Wisdom's benefits, benefits and specific instructions, benefits and specific instructions, benefits of wisdom. Notice how chiastic that little piece is. And then overall, warnings against adultery, warnings against perverse ways, warnings again against adultery, which is to engage folly and so commit oneself to a God other than Yahweh, to a way of life which is outside of the wisdom of the Creator. Warnings against adultery. So the lectures themselves are important, and it's important for us to identify with the male, my son. We are the sons. Whether we're female or male, in the language of Proverbs, we become that male person who is standing in front of two different women, each of whom is attractive. Now, what is the attraction? We have to be wise enough to understand the attraction, and we have to be even more wise to go with wisdom who will bless our lives because she speaks on behalf of God, rather than adultery or folly, who will lead us in strange ways where we will destroy ourselves. While much of the book of Proverbs exists at very brief, usually those two-line antithetic parallelism statements about living wisely, these Proverbs only make sense after reading and understanding the lectures on wisdom and folly as a single unit. If at the end of these lectures we choose folly as our life companion, the rest of the book means nothing to us. If, however, at the end of the lectures we choose wisdom as our life companion, the rest of the book is essentially the atmosphere in and the furnishings of the house of wisdom. In other words, Proverbs themselves are the lifestyle of those who have committed to a lifetime relationship with God as manifested in the personification of wisdom. A very important thing to think about as we move into the book of Proverbs, and you can see more of that in my book, Covenant Documents.